This podcast is intended for educational purposes only and is not medical or legal advice. Always follow your local policies, procedures, and protocols when functioning in your respective profession. Additionally, the views expressed by the speakers and owners of this podcast are their own and do not represent the views of their respective employers. Listener discretion is advised.
Alert Medic 1, respond.
Ken, Josh, and Mustafa here. Welcome back to the Alert Medic 1 podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Buenos noches and buenos dias and all the good mornings and good evenings, and wherever you're at. We've got a cool episode for you guys tonight. We're gonna take on Mindset Traps Part 2. For those folks that weren't here for Part 1, I guess I go back and rewind and hit that up. You guys okay with that? So there were three things that we talked about on Mindset Traps. Number one, and really the whole point behind Mindset Traps is paying attention to some of the things that are contributing to burnout and contributing to, you know, people falling out of love with the job and people falling out of love with their departments, and, you know, trying to get into the mental health stuff a little bit. Which, you know, I think you talk to anybody that's been doing this job any amount of time, they can tell you they all hit the wall at some point with certain things. And this is really a lot from my perspective, my personal perspective, and things that I went through, things that I said to myself that unfortunately did rob me of my love for a little while for the job, and took my agency, right? Or your sense, kind of took my sense of self and my sense of control over my career. And these are some ways to reframe them. So going back to Part 1, in order to understand the mindset traps, you kind of need to understand where these things are coming from, and you need to evaluate the inputs. These are things like, you know, what you're following on social media, you know, kind of curating your feed really intentionally, with people and pages and stuff like that, that are enhancing your life or can enhance your game, with the stuff that they're putting out there. You know, what you take in very heavily influences your frame of reference. It may even be feeding you a mindset that's holding you back. I mean, that's how powerful social media is. And everybody knows about the algorithms, and everybody knows about how, you know, you click on one picture one time, and the next thing you know, it's what you see for the next 4 or 5 days. Or if you just talk loud enough near your phone, it'll listen to you, and it'll start curating the feed for you. But paying attention to what you consume, you know, if it builds a healthy mindset and you relate to it on that level, keep it. If it really doesn't, if it's just kind of like the fast food, of social media, and I'm not hating on people that do this kind of stuff at all. I mean, if it's giving you a creative outlet, it's a creative outlet. It's healthy for you, but be responsible with what you're putting out. The next thing is the people, and this, you know, Ken, and this generated a lot of discussion on the last episode when we talked about this. It's, you know, it's who you're around and who you're interacting with. And, you know, you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. And I think it tracks to some degree. I think you need to look at it micro and macro, just me personally. You're looking at your network and your inner circle, and you're really kind of asking yourself, you know, are these the folks that you want to count into that average? You know, if every time you start to get some motivation and momentum going, and there's these folks right there with like the pithy words and the negativity, and man, you got to get away from that stuff. You know, I put a post out the other day of one of my favorite Joe Rogan clips ever is when he's talking about all the negative people, and, you know, getting that, you know, keep that shit away from you. You know, you can't be around that kind of stuff. It's that crabs in a bucket. A lot of folks like that analogy, you know. I'll hit it again. So picture a bucket full of crabs. And if you ever watch this is true. And every time a crab finds himself close to the top and looks like he's getting out, the ones on the bottom grab his legs and they drag him right back down to the bottom. And that's kind of how some people in our lives are. Sometimes it's our partner and they were just assigned with that individual and you can't get away from it. Sometimes it's your crew, sometimes it's your team, a person on your team. And you got to do what you got to do in order to protect your psyche from that kind of stuff, from that kind of negativity, because it's so powerful. Right, guys? I mean, it'll get you if you're not paying attention to it. And finally, it was the actions. What are you doing, or what actions and goal? What actions are you taking in pursuit of your goals that are oriented toward physical, mental, and spiritual health? You know, there's a lot more to being healthy than just getting jacked at the gym. There's a lot more to being healthy than just going to church every Sunday or whatever it is that you do. There's a whole lot more to being healthy than meditating. It's a big cake. It's a big pie. You need all those ingredients for it to work for you. If you're doing nothing healthy in any way except sleeping and scrolling and eating your way through the day, guys, you got to get a hold of it. It's just it'll kill you, quite literally. It can kill you. Ken and Josh, correct me if I'm wrong. Number one line of duty death killer is cardiovascular disease. Is that still true in the fire department?
Between that and cancer right now.
Ah, cancer. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's great to work. And this is the trap I got caught in on honing the craft and sharpening the edge and working. That for a long time was really the only thing I was doing meaningfully to contribute to myself and my development. Yeah, I was doing some kind of bunk workouts. I was doing it to say I was working out, so I was taking care of myself physically. I didn't let myself really go, but I wasn't focusing on the man holistically to take care of myself mentally. And there's a big piece of it. You know, pop psychology and social media doesn't fix anything. I think we talked about this with Trevor a little bit, right? Like people choosing trauma or people choosing trauma mindsets and things like that. And that, you know, you can control some of that to a degree. I would invite everybody to go back to Dr. Wilkins, the podcast we did with Dr. Wilkins, to unpack the bigger parts of mental health and how not having that stuff together can really ruin your career. And I'll say this, I said on the last podcast, you know, a dude night around a fire with a little bourbon and not a lot of words, that's wonders for your mental health, man. Do you guys have anything on any of that?
I feel like Ken has something to say. He has that pending look.
No, actually, I really don't have anything to add to it, but, appreciate it. I had some sporadic thoughts, but nothing of any significant value.
Nothing that I just said had any significant value. So.
We're here to make you feel like it does. So
yeah,
check. What are the bros for?
We've talked about a bunch of this stuff in the past over numerous episodes about surrounding yourself with the good, surrounding yourself with the positive, surrounding yourself with the things that's going to move you forward in life, whether it's professionally, with your family, personally, whatever it is. Don't surround yourself with negativity. If you find yourself around it, try and find a way away from it. Or if you think it's feasible, try and build up that area around you. Build up, as me and Cody have heard many times, build your fighting position. So, you know, if those people that are negative around you, you think you have a possibility of maybe changing their mindset or bringing them into like, hey, let's think some positivity. Try it, because you don't want to let that partner, that coworker, that friend, that family member just continue on in this negative cycle. If you have a possibility to intervene in some way, I'm not saying be the corrector of all their ways, but try and be that positive impact that maybe that's what they need. They need to be working with that positive partner. They're like, oh, this person likes this job. Loves this job. That's what I was looking for. I was looking for someone that wanted to do this, and maybe it relights that fire in their soul about whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's this job, whether it's something at home, whether it's a hobby, whatever. do that if you can. But also, take care of yourself. Make sure you are searching for the good, going for the good, and improving your fighting position.
I think to piggyback on that, something I always like to do every once in a while is I just think about who I'm surrounding myself with and why. Like, what are they giving me? What am I getting from them? Not like, did Moose send me the Amazon gift card for my birthday this year, which he didn't, for the record. But what value do they have in my life? Am I surrounding myself with positive, forward-thinking people, or am I surrounding myself with people who bring me down? I mean, I do the same thing as unhealthy as social media is. I mean, I use social media, and I try to be smart about that because I have had friends on social media who all the time, you know, maybe people I worked with, just talked about how awful and horrible and terrible the job was and how everything was wrong every time, every day. All they did was complain. And I just muted them, you know, like I don't need to see that because that doesn't give me anything. Maybe it makes you feel better because you're able to vent and complain, but you honestly really probably have a deeper issue if you're that upset all the time. You can adjust what you can't change everything you see in the world, but what you can do is adjust your filters, right? And social media is just like that. You can adjust what you're seeing. You don't need the negativity, the unproductiveness, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you can't, especially in a job like we have, you can't filter whatever that next call is. It might be something terrible and traumatizing, but you can filter how you look at it, right? You know, my dad once told me, probably the best advice he ever gave me, you can't control what happens to you in life, but you can control how you react to it. And I think that's kind of like the key here when we think about surrounding ourselves with the right people. You can't control who's around you in life, but you can control who you let in your circle. I'm going to step off my pulpit now and give the show back to Cody.
No, it's perfect, man. You can't change people, but you can change the people around you. Right? Those are great points, Ken.
Well, I want to highlight what Josh said too, right? So I have made that mistake where I thought that I was just cutting people, negative people out, but it was part of a larger mindset where I felt like I was taking ownership for what I could do, and part of that was cutting myself away from like negative people per se, so that I could do better. But what I ended up finding out was I was being selfish and not giving them enough credit that they deserved. Like, yes, they were certainly times where they were super negative, super, you know, not good coworkers. But I also wasn't giving them the time of day, and I'd written them off. So I liked what Josh said about like maybe people just need that positivity, right? Maybe they need for, it's not even an example because they know, I mean, oftentimes folks know what the right thing to do is, but when you're not in a flock that does, you know, follow those types of, you know, mentalities and rules, sometimes people are just looking to be, you know, around positivity. I'll give you an example. I said something, you know, to one of my coworkers a while ago about leadership, right? And I said, you know, it's the example that I said was, you know, critique shouldn't ever be given in public. If you have critique about someone, you should probably be doing it in private, and then you should be praising them in public. And it was interesting. I never thought I'd, you know, hear this person say this, but they said, oh yeah, I'm guilty of this too. And, you know, I wasn't really expecting that from them. It's all about what you bring to people. I always use the example, we've talked about this before. My dad, it's kind of different, but it's kind of the same. My dad was never open about his mental health until I was open about my mental health. Then, like, this old Indian guy who, you know, traditionally no one talked about mental health, suddenly he was talking to me about his mental health. So, I know that's a little bit different, but I think it's the similarities are you bring the change that you want to see, but also know your limits and know that eventually folks may not change.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's like be the best version that you could be that day for the benefit, for your own benefit. And you could at least walk away to your point, Josh, you could walk away. What?
We just froze. Lost you just for keep a good talking. Minute.
You can at least walk away from a negative environment knowing that you didn't contribute to it. You know, that you weren't a part of it, that you didn't throw gasoline on that fire. And it's, that speaks to, back to what you were talking about, Mustafa, is leadership, right? You don't need the position. You don't need the bars to do it. You can set an example, or you can provide an example for other folks to follow when they need it.
If people were playing a drinking game where they had to take a shot every time one of us brought up leadership, they probably wouldn't get past a few minutes of any episode. I'm just saying.
Don't judge me.
I love it. No, I love it. I'm just saying. Yeah.
That's what it comes down to a lot with the topics that we're talking about. Mental health. There's a leadership problem in that. Both a personal and an organizational leadership problem there. Especially if you're going through it alone, somebody's not paying attention. Anyway, I'll skip that part. But are you guys ready to get into the mindset traps that we, these are stories that we tell ourselves about the job?
Real quick. I wanted to kind of echo things that were being said, and where you find yourself in a spot where you can't be anymore and you move on to somewhere else to find that positivity. So there's two guys on my shift that did this. They were at different stations and both encountered situations, a long-standing situation. It was a singular episode where they realized that station, that shift, was not the place they needed to be. Either they weren't getting the experience, they felt burnt out because the lack of experience, that they just weren't doing the reps as a medic, or the other guy who just the rest of the shift did not have the go mentality that he had and that the captain was trying to instill in the shift, and it just was not happening. And that guy, the firefighter, the day that it switched in his mind, he texted me and said, "Hey, do you think I should, you know, give a call to your station captain and be like, hey, I'd like to put in for the open spot that's coming up next month?" I said, "Yeah, sure. Yeah, give him a call." And what do you know? Now he's on our shift and he's highly motivated. You know, he's getting checked off on more things every day. And he's a great addition to the shift. And then the medic, he was at a place where it was slower. He didn't feel like he was getting the reps. He was getting burnt out from being on a shift that he didn't feel great with, a call volume he didn't feel great with. So he's, you know, seeked out that positivity. And now he's with us. And we're just kind of bringing him up to the level that we have for, well, you know, our medics on our shift. And he's doing great, you know. And so sometimes, like I said, find that positivity. Seek it out. New shift, new station, new supervisor, whatever it is. So, but now, yeah, we can get into the mindset traps.
Yeah.
Mindset traps.
Oh, that's going to be the reel right there, buddy. So it actually dovetails nicely. So the first mindset trap, or the first story that I think that we start telling ourselves, is it's not supposed to be like this. It's not supposed to be this way. And the reframe for it. So I'll give you the trap and then the reframe right after it. So the reframe for it's not supposed to be this way is, dude, remember what you're here for. The real reason why the position that you're in exists. And here's some of those stories. So, it's 20 calls a shift. We shouldn't be running this many calls. We shouldn't be doing this much work. Half these people don't even need to go to the hospital, much less go in an ambulance or have a fire truck come to the house. or my other favorite one are the people that come back from every call that they go on and come back to the station and talk about what a bullshit call it was. Like every single call they go on was a bullshit call. And I'm just like, maybe you missed something, man. Perhaps. Anyway, so let's work on reframing this, right? These were things that were, I would say to myself and go, golly, man, we should be this busy. It's not safe to be this busy. It's just a bunch of nonsensical agreements that I was making. And I think one thing that helped pull me out of it was, remember that it ain't about you, right? You're not assigned to that ambulance or fire engine or on a helicopter to fulfill your personal needs and desires. You're not. Unfortunately, you're not. You're there for them. You're there for the citizens in your response area. You're there for your county. You're there for your state. You're there for your city, whatever, what have you. You know, the job that you think is so cool and exists for you to do nothing more than, let me go back and say that again. I got my notes mixed up. sometimes this job exists for you to do nothing more than just be a good human when somebody calls. When that caller has, or that the patient or victim or whatever word you want to use, has nobody else to turn to. They got no other way of getting the care that they need or they think they need. And gosh, man, what a privilege it is to be that person that shows up and helps. If you don't do anything more than just reassure them that they're not dying on the way to the hospital, and you get a chance to make them feel like somebody cares about them, which quite often, and I think we can all agree that sometimes that's why people call in the first place. They need to feel like somebody loves them. They need to feel like somebody cares about them. Reframe number two, and this is kind of a funny one. It's a little tongue in cheek, but what else are you going to do? You know, sit around bored, you know, waiting for a real emergency. have you guys ever seen what boredom does to a team or a station or a shift culture? It's crazy. Crazy. It's taking great people with great minds and putting them in an environment that doesn't allow them to be those people. And man, it's crazy. Have you guys ever seen what a room full of type A people what could happen in that room when they're bored and left unsupervised? It's shenanigans. A funny story is I was on a deployment and we had some downtime and we didn't have much going on, and we had locked ourselves in a closet and we're throwing rat traps at each other. That's how we combated boredom. But to be, you know, all kidding aside, I'd rather be so busy that I don't even get close to the drama and all that in between calls nonsense that people do. You know, the reframe for me that also worked was, you know, come to work expecting to run 30 and be happy that it was only 20. You know, what do you guys got?
Cody, I identify with this number one so much. Like, I did a grand rounds on a call that at the end of it all, that was the essence of everything. It was a lift assist that turned into a massive inferior wall MI, right sided, that could have easily, any crew in the United States could have easily shown up, picked the patient up off the floor at the grocery store, said, have a nice night, and gone back in service. We just happened to ask the right question. That's all, quite honestly. And at the end, it was a rehash of what you just said, Cody. What are we doing from 7 to 7? We're here to serve the citizens of wherever we work. Whatever your shift is, 8 to 5, 7 to 7, 12 to 12, 6 to 6, I don't care what it is. Between the hours that you clock in and you sign out or clock out, go home, you are there for the citizens. You are there for the people that you're meant to serve. Whether that's a public entity, a private entity, a volunteer, government, whatever. And it doesn't matter what those calls are. You know, yeah, I'm not going to say that I go to work every day and I look at every call with bright eye, bushy tail, walk away from it thinking rainbows and sunshine. No, that's not every day. That's not every call. It's okay to be like, that was BS. That was like, why were we called? But if you start treating every call like that, every patient with that attitude, that's when it becomes a problem. And I agree. I would 100% rather be busy from the moment I walk in the station to the moment I go home the next day. I will add a caveat. I like to sleep at night, and calls after midnight really, really, really hurt.
Yeah, I always say you could run me to death until 11:30, then forget I exist. You know,
I know when I show up at my station, we're the busiest in the county. We're going to be running. Doesn't matter what you know. I know that there's a chance I'm going to be running. And there's certain ones where there's a higher propensity than others. And if you just go in saying, I'm going to get destroyed today on this unit, then anything less than that is easy, you know? And then to echo your part about a room full of type A personalities, when this boredom sets in, COVID was horrible
for us. Oh, man, yeah.
Not that we were dysfunctional or anything like that, but the call volume slowed down and we just didn't know what to do with ourselves. It was miserable. And, you know, someone listening to this right now is like, wait, the busiest station in the county got miserable because they got less calls. Yeah, that's what happens. I get more tired when I run less.
Oh, those shifts are awful. They're terrible.
You go all day and then your first call's at 9 o'clock at night. Oh, it hurts. But no, it's like we signed up for this for a reason. Try and remember that reason. Try and imbue it in how you conduct yourself on a daily basis, how you conduct yourself with the public, with your patients' families. And don't let the negativity seep in. It's going to be there. It's going to happen from time to time. No one's perfect. No one has the best mentality every day they show up. We all have our bad days, our bad calls. I'm not talking the traumatic ones. I'm just talking the ones that you're just like, man, I don't want to be here. But we are here. So let's finish it. Let's get the patient to where they need to be, whether it's the hospital, whether it's a refusal, whether it's they go by POV to their PCP. Provide a service that is competent, appropriate, and efficient for you and the patient, and continue serving. That's what we're there for. We're not there to find a way to stay out of service just so we can dodge calls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead. Okay. I had two things I wanted to piggyback on what Josh said. Number one, I remember, actually this goes back to what you said, Cody, when you talked about reframing, and this was like part number one was like, I won't rehash it, but I remember watching an old episode of Cops. I was probably like 11 or 12. And I remember them interviewing this police officer, and he said that one thing you don't realize about being a police officer is that a large percentage of that is just being somebody's parent. And in a way, that really stuck with me. And when I got into EMS, I was like, you know, a lot of what I'm doing is just taking care of things for people that for whatever reason they can't do themselves, and they just need another adult to come in here and help them deal with their situation. And it may not really even be a medical issue at its core. It may be just something, you know, sociological in their lives where they're like, they can't pay their bills or, you know, whatever the real underlying issue is. But going in with the mindset that I'm just there as another helping adult into somebody else's life got me through a lot of really quote unquote bullshit calls, right? Like, it wasn't an emergency to me, but to them it was, and they needed help, and I was there to help. And that mindset got me through a lot. The other thing is to piggyback on what Josh said. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but when I was on a particular medic 15, for a while, that was the busiest medic in the country. And we ran an obscene amount of calls every day, every night. And I would work with people who were like, this is ridiculous. It's not safe. We shouldn't be running this much, blah, blah, blah. I always went in with the attitude that Josh described. I expected to get 20 calls on a summer night. And if I got 12 or 15, that was a glorious win. And I'd go into like holidays expecting to get 30. And if I got 20, that was great. And they're all nonsense, you know, refusal handled by police, you know, when you get that many calls, it's not, you know, the substance isn't there. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted to piggyback on those two things because I thought they were important.
I think it's important because we've talked a lot about volume, number of calls, amount of calls, and that X percentage of them aren't, by our definition, emergencies or 911 calls. And I think it's important, and this is for, you know, for everybody listening too, is remember, we're trained specifically to be able to identify what is an emergency situation or emergency condition and what's not. We are specifically trained to do that. Joe Public's not. All they know is that something's wrong, something doesn't feel right, and I'm going to call the people that know what to do with this. And, you know, cool, if that happens 20, 30 times a day and only three of them were, I mean, like, legit emergencies, and I hate to use that term, but then great. Then that means 17 people aren't gravely ill or weren't gravely ill or aren't going to have their lives completely changed because of some episode that they had. The other thing that came to mind was, do you guys pay attention to any Tony Robbins stuff? Well, you should. Anyway, Tony Robbins talking, he has this one thing that he did with Theo Vaughn on his podcast, which was an awesome episode. But he talks about where focus goes, energy flows. So if you're focusing on the fact that you're running so many calls, you're getting beat up, and that's where all your energy is going to go to. It's going to go to feeding that mindset is what he's getting at. And if you're focusing on, man, we're supposed to be doing this many calls. We're supposed to be this. I'm glad these folks are calling us. I'm glad we're getting an opportunity to put folks' minds at ease with stuff. Then, well, your energy is going to flow to support that mindset. You know, if you go around and all you see are bullshit calls, bullshit patients and nonsense, then that's all you're going to see until you learn to look for the spots and the points in the day where you do some good and recognize that you're doing good by just showing up. You're doing good. You're doing the right thing. We'll move on to the next big trap. And this is what I call a professional trap. That's not my job. It's a big one. It's not my job. Not my job to do this. And it's like, well, actually it is. To whom much is given, much is expected, right? I call that a quitting conversation. You're quitting. This isn't my job. You're quitting. You start quitting right then. We've been talking about this for a minute. You know, not everything we do is a cool disaster that's worthy of its own, you know, 911 Lone Star episode plot, right? Can you imagine a shift like that for real, by the way? What? Oh God. That'd be terrible. that would be a book in 24 hours. But it's, you know, sometimes it is mundane and menial and mentally exhausting, and you know, yeah, sometimes it is cleaning the toilet that you didn't use. But that's not my job speaks to an entitlement mindset, an entitlement mentality. And it's a poison that I can personally attest to, that it's worse than someone who's negative all day. I would rather be around somebody who maybe hated their life a little bit than someone who's entitled to everything. I would much rather be around that person 100,000%. Even though I guess they're maybe two sides of the same coin to some degree, but I believe, and I'm seeing this, that entitlement is slowly killing the profession, right? Our numbers are down. Our recruitment is down. You can't get folks because I'm not doing this or that or the other thing. And it's not my job to clean this. It's not my job to pick up that. It's not my job to count this. It's not my job to do all these other things that the organization's asked you to do throughout the shift. And, you know, here's a little bit of the reframe for you. If leadership can't trust you to do the day-to-day stuff where lives don't matter because you feel entitled not to do it, then how on earth will they ever trust you with big stuff when lives do matter? How is that possible? I don't think they can. And having been in leadership positions, I have asked myself that question when I'm seeing that X mundane task is not getting done. I'm like, you guys, just the other day, we were talking about adding this big invasive thing to our toolbox and want me to go to the boss and make a case for it, but I can't trust you to take the trash out. What? Come on. It's a part of it is about being a pro, right? Go ahead, Josh.
So it's funny you bring that up because so my agency recently instituted pumps, and a friend of mine was teaching some other paramedics about the pumps, and this one person is just going up and down. Why do we do this? Why are we doing blah, 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 blah. Just being so negative about this new change or this addition to our service. And the same person goes, so why aren't we getting RSI? And my friend who's teaching me is like, you want to go that route, but you can't wrap your head around this. Let's pump the brakes a little bit. Like, you gotta understand that we're just not entitled to everything just because it's a part of the scope of practice. You understand that there's things that get in the way of other stuff, that just because you think you're at this level doesn't mean we get that stuff. But at the same time, the stuff that's being offered to you, embrace it, understand it, and do it. And that may lead to other things in the future.
I think that's so huge, right? I've recently made a transition to a new organization, and some of the things that were in my scope aren't in my scope anymore. And I'm not eligible for it for X amount of time. And oh man, I was salty. Ooh, I was sore. And a lot of the folks that I work with have already heard me rant and rave about it. And then it hits me one day, like, you got to fucking earn it. Just like everything else. You want to operate at a certain level, you got to earn it. You can't show up entitled to certain things because you had that capability somewhere else. That's just so huge to bring that up, Josh.
So I'm going to ask another question, though. I'm going to ask another question, though. So, like, and at risk, I don't want to, I know we have a time crunch here, but I think it's a balance, though, right? So what you say, the example you said of, if I can't trust you to take out the trash, how can I trust you with X? If I'm an insubordinate with a bad leader, I say, well, I can't trust you to be a good leader. And the culture you're spewing is garbage. So why would I want to contribute to this organization? So I think it's a balance, right? Because how do you fix that? Well, you fix that, I think, by what you're describing. Someone has to be the first one to be a positive mindset, right? Somebody's got to do it. And kind of what Josh was talking about before, maybe that subordinate's affect, their demeanor, maybe they iron their pants and not me, but if they like use the lint roller for once, that professional look might change something, right? But I don't want to discount, and I know someone probably just took a shot because of I said leadership, but you kind of have to dig deeper as to, and not just dismiss people as being shitbags, right? You, as a good leader, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. We all know shitbags are out there. Because going back to the other example that Josh gave, there are certainly situations where, Josh's example is perfect for saying, we're trying to implement this clinical thing and you want this way more serious, invasive clinical thing. If you don't understand the logic and the medicine behind X, why are you, and you don't see the utility of X, how could we give you responsibility for such a greater Y? What I would also, I'm not talking about this particular situation, but what I would ask is that level of medicine being supported? Right now, it sounds like at Josh's organization it is, but in a situation where it's not, I think that could be why certain folks are not up to par with their clinical education, right? With their clinical understanding. And I think part of that responsibility falls on the organization and the leadership to promote that kind of excellence. So I just wanted to say those two things.
Yeah, well, in both your examples, leadership, in my opinion, leadership is the core of the, both of those problems, right? If I'm as the leader, I'm saying, I can't trust you to do this day-to-day thing. How am I ever going to trust you to do this other thing? That's you as the leader, or that's me as a leader saying, oh, shit, I guess I got to start doing my job now, right? I have to start.
Yeah.
I have to simultaneously
be asking, what have I done to not cultivate the culture of them?
Because what I'll tell you, we lost Moose for a second. Because what I'll tell you is, if I'm the subordinate on the other side of that conversation, I'm going to be pretty wound up. I'm going to be pretty upset. And then I'm going to go, well, you've been letting it slide for 3 months. At what point is this not my problem anymore? Right. It's a leadership problem. Go ahead, Ken.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, the whole leader follower dynamic is really built on trust, right? And I think that speaks to kind of what you guys are saying. If you can't trust the follower to do the work, but the follower can't trust the leader to show the way and to lead by example, you're going to have a stalemate. You're going to have a complete breakdown of that relationship, and the subordinate's not going to work, and the leader's going to get angry, and the subordinate's going to get angry, and it all just falls apart.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And when it comes to combating this entitlement mindset that, you know, every now and again, you know, I fall victim to it as well. Here's some ways that I've gotten myself out of it. Reframe number one is just remember that you asked to be there. You asked to be a part of that organization. You asked to do this job. You volunteered for it. I have yet to have ever seen the man in the back of somebody's car with the gun firmly pressed to the back of their head, forcing people to do this job, or to be a certain organization or a shit job, or, you know, whatever, what have you. And if the standard is in that place is too high to do, XYZ to a high standard, then I think, you know, if it's too high to do that, then maybe go somewhere else. Right. That's what Michael Jordan would have told you if you were on the Chicago Bulls in the 90s. And if it was too hard, see ya. See you later. But he also, to everybody's point that they've been making, he led by example as well. He had built the juice to be able to call that kind of stuff out. Reframe number two for this. And, you know, sometimes it's really that simple. It's the price you pay to belong to that particular organization. If there's too much training, you're giving up too much personal time, and all this stuff for the organization. And you know what, guys, sometimes that's what it takes to be at a top tier organization. Maybe it comes with a little bit more time away from them. Maybe it comes with these other things that you maybe weren't prepared for. Reframe number three is, this is my favorite one. And I've got this, it's on my whiteboard up here. I think I've put it out on the interwebs a couple of times, is that, you know what, your competition, the people that you're competing against for promotion, they're thanking you for not giving 100% that day. They're loving the fact that you aren't going to take, oh, it's not your job. Fine. That's all right, buddy. I got it. Because in today's world where reputation is everything and promotions are on the line and all that great stuff, I personally appreciate you not doing your job today. That gives me that opportunity to pick up that ball and get it across the goal line. Thanks. Thanks for making the competition just a little bit easier. So pick whichever one of those three reframes that helps you through the moment that day. And hopefully it makes it a little bit easier. Hopefully it breaks an entitlement mentality, or it gets you more oriented toward, to whom much is given, much is expected. And this is the last one, and I know we don't have a whole lot of time for it. But the last mindset trap that really got me in trouble it's very closely. It's the ugly step cousin to the first one, and this is not fair. This isn't fair. Not being treated fairly. It's not fair that I've had to do this. It's not fair that I had to do that. And I'll challenge you. So I had a senior NCO when I was in the military that said this to me. He said, I would challenge you to imagine your life and how much better your life would be if you eliminated the word fair. That because the world doesn't care, right? The organization doesn't care. The world doesn't care. Nobody cares about how you think it should be. It is what it is. And there's some, you know, mystical stoic philosophies, you know, you can weave that in there, at some point if you wanted to, but sometimes it's not fair that someone got something you didn't, and it's not fair that you were held over for a late call, and it's not fair, X, Y, or Z. It's not fair, but it is what it is. So stop trying to force the world and the organizations and this job to be what you think it should be. What did Candace Owens say? You know, life's hard. Get a helmet. Sometimes that's the way it is.
You know, Cody, the whole bit about it being fair and why does this person get this over me, or getting held late on the call, all these things. I find it to be like pervasive in our profession in a very specific realm. I missed out on that call because I was on this call. Why did those people get to go to the call? Like in my department, they got to go on the fire, but we didn't because we were stuck on this call. Or, you know, the medic that upgrades, man, I missed that fire because I had to upgrade this call. Man, that's not fair. It's like, hey, you take every call as they come. My captain lives by that. He's like, you take a call one at a time, and that's how you treat it. You focus all your energy on what you're doing right then, and you don't worry about what could happen outside of this scenario right now. Don't be bothered by missing runs or the cool call that happens because you're on the lift assist. That's what we're here for. You know, luckily, in my agency, someone's always going to show up at that other call. Like, we're very plentiful, space full agency. So you don't have to worry about that. But at the same time, don't get hung up on it because it's just going to make you get burnt out and be like, man, I'm running all these BS calls and I'm not getting the cool stuff like the other units are, da 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 da. It's just going to lead to negativity for yourself and burnout and distaste for the job or the agency you're working for or whatever. Take each call as it happens. Yeah. Once again, we're not all perfect. We're going to be like, man, I missed that really cool one. But if you go into life thinking it completely as a fairness thing or go into this job as a fairness thing, you're going to come out disappointed. Just take each call as it happens. Take each shift as they happen. And I guarantee you will be happier in the job. Just accept 100%. the ticket that's been punched for you. Accept the, what am I looking for? Accept the
play the hand you're dealt.
Thank you. Yeah. And it just makes life easier in this job. You know, 17 years later for me and Ken, how many years, Cody? I know it's more than 17.
21. 64.
And even Moose is, Moose, you're at?
I just hit 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years. Yeah. I still love this job. I take this mentality with me to work, to life, about this profession. And it makes things a lot easier to get through.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gotta be honest with you. I learned the whole, I didn't realize that I didn't know the lesson yet. But I kind of learned this lesson recently, relatively recently, of, it doesn't really matter what you think. Right. The fact of the matter is things are sometimes just going to happen. And if you're reaching for a goal of quote unquote fair, it ain't happening because that's not how the world works. And it sucks. Right. And I think I'm kind of thinking about my specific situation. Like it sucks because sometimes you know that objectively something is like not cool. right? But the fact of the matter is, it still doesn't matter that it's not fair. Like, that in itself is not the reasoning, right? You can only do what you can do, and it doesn't matter, like, what you think, in the sense that if you keep moving forward, you keep working, eventually, if you are correct, I am a firm believer that things work out in some sort of way, right? Mm-hmm. But going back to the what Josh said about missing calls, man, I still am guilty of that. Like, I'll be honest with you, I'm still guilty of, damn, like, I was on this thing. Because I don't run that often, right?
So yes, we all are.
Yeah.
We all are.
Oh, I know.
It happens, but, everyone. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, I'm still, like, guilty of that. But then I think about it, and my head is going to a particular call that I had where it was a traumatic situation. We limited who entered the scene to myself and then a law enforcement officer. And there's a young law enforcement officer that really wanted to go see this thing. And at the end, like, what I told him, I said, listen, man, your time will come and you're going to have to deal with that scene your own way. But don't be looking for stuff either. Right. Like, your time will come in the sense that you're going to, I hate to say it this way, but your trauma is going to come. If you're in this job, your trauma is going to come. Don't go looking for it, because it's coming. And if you have opportunities to limit it, then you probably should do so. And I know that's a little bit of a different topic, but I don't know, the fair thing, like, I guess what I wanted to say was, I learned that, I thought I knew it, but I didn't, and I learned it more recently, certainly more recently than I thought I would.
Well, you're hitting on the last points, really. I think what we're all kind of saying is, like, to some degree, we need to learn how to cope better with the day-to-day adversity. That's a big word for what we're actually encountering, which is inconvenience. But yeah, I think we could all learn to cope a little bit better with it. But to your point, Moose and Josh, you know, control what you can. You can't control the way the organization does things. You can't control the way that your boss does things. You can't control that stuff. You can control how you show up and how you respond to it. And what you control, what you can. And if you can't, move on. Stop letting it destroy your career, because that's what it'll do. It absolutely will. It will absolutely rob you of the joy and the sense of accomplishment that should come from being paid to help people.
And that's what it did for me. It was... I was in a rough spot, and the people that I had an issue with were doing just fine. So the only person that was hurting and the only person that was affected was me. So I haven't really talked about this to anyone, but, like, now that I think about it, the only choice I had was to keep going, you know, reframe what I was thinking. And now that I think about it, that ended up being the right call.
And I think it's a good note to finish up on, because we're coming up on our time limit for tonight. And these two episodes, they've been about, you know, mindsets, what we're thinking about and how we're feeling about our job. And it's been the world according to me a whole lot. These solutions and these reframes don't work. They won't work for everyone. I've recently gotten into stuff like Stoicism and Stoic philosophy. You know, Dr. Wilkins, when he was on, he talks a lot about it, and a lot of his proclivities are rooted in the same realm, in the same world as Stoicism. And it's not about being emotionless. And this is the big point I want everybody to take away from this. It's not about being emotionless, cold, and you know, a machine and robotic. It's about using your emotions less to make sense out of the world and to make sense out of the things that are happening. That when we stop responding to it emotionally, we have rationality and logic, and we're able to tease out the lessons that we're supposed to learn. You know, things like what, instead of what's the situation doing to me, it's what did it do for me? Speaking back to things like, you know, sometimes taking a call when you're not supposed to, you know, that's the one the supervisor remembers when it comes time for promotions. You know, that it's, it could be that simple, or it could be much more complex to the degree that your organization is looking at implementing a new clinical thing. And they know that they've got the crews that can do it and the crews that can handle it because they're handling the other stuff as well. But I appreciate everybody playing along. That's all I got.
There he is. We lost you for a sec.
Yeah, I saw it. Figured I'd just sit real still.
No, I'm glad we did this, man. This was a really important conversation. And this was good.
I feel like there could be a part three, maybe sometime in the future. There's all kind of mindsets out there within this profession. I know I was just talking about one yesterday with another creator that kind of boggles my mind. And I would love us to dissect it a little bit, but I'll leave that for then. And maybe the listeners, that'll intrigue them for maybe another mindset trap or mindset-esque like episode.
Cool.
But Cody is frozen, so I'll take us out. Don't know when that's going to unfreeze. But hey, everybody, thanks for listening to Alert Medic One tonight on Mindset Traps number 2. Wherever you are, thank you for listening. And make sure you follow us on Instagram. That's where our main focus is right now. Maybe you'll see us pop up in some other social media more coming up in the future. Don't know, but just pay attention. And wherever you are, have a good evening, good morning, good night, good afternoon, and be safe. See ya.